From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Robert Siegel.
And I'm Noah Adams. On Thursdays, we read from your letters. And we'll begin today with a note from San Francisco and Donald LaFrance. I listened with interest to your piece on the homeless in my city. While the story was balanced, it really did not do justice to the problem. I walk the streets daily in good neighborhoods and bad, and I constantly have to dodge homeless drug abusers and the mentally ill. The stench on the streets from urine and feces is overwhelming. The park across the street from our apartment building is full of homeless at night, and they keep us awake with fights and paranoid screams all through the hours of darkness.
Mr. LaFrance continues, I certainly feel sorry for those less fortunate. Nevertheless, one of the answers is not to allow people to live on the streets, period. San Francisco spends roughly $170 million a year on the homeless. Where does the money go?
We've received lots of mail about our interviews with people detained after September 11th, detained unfairly in their view. Alnor Kassam writes, thanks for your continued look at the reverse victims. At the time Ruby Ridge and Waco took place, I did not have an appreciation of Randy Weaver's family or the Branch Davidians' perspective of their persecution by the FBI. After listening to the interviews by Mr. Siegel, I can better understand what the FBI may look like from the other side.
Most of the letters, though, took the other side of the argument. Jim Barnes of Houston, Texas says, I do not really care about these people being inconvenienced. Inconvenience is not a violation of one's rights. Besides, most of these people are violators of immigration law.
Johnny Walters of Lewisburg, North Carolina asks, regarding the French teacher and his newlywed bride detained on dubious charges, please tell the public why we should care how this man felt about being detained on possible terrorist connections, not the least of which was an expired visa topped with a thin marriage to a young American woman whom he met on the Internet and married post-haste.
And Tom Hope adds from Portland, Oregon, we are at war. Get over it. Settle down and let the adults do the best they can under difficult circumstances.
On another matter, Jeffrey Popovich sends this from Kensington, Maryland. He writes, I've been stewing about this all weekend. Arguably one of the most influential musicians of the past half century, an integral component of inarguably the most influential band of any century, dies. And the person you chose to talk to is Michael Palin, a fine actor and comedic genius, but someone who knows squat about George Harrison's musical legacy. 4 minutes plus a song? George meant more to many of us than that, and deserved more than that from you.
Thank you very much for the obituary about Margaret Bird Rawson, writes Alan Williams of Luray, Virginia, and he continues, I am one of the many students who benefited from her tireless work on dyslexia. During my elementary school days, when she first tested me, I was a frustrated young boy who could not keep up reading and writing with my classmates. I was gradually able to catch up and begin to enjoy learning. Perhaps more important than the skills, she taught me how to laugh at my mistakes and not to worry so much about being a poor speller and a slow reader. I visited her shortly after her 100th birthday, and she still was interested in what and how I was doing.
Thanks to all for writing. The email address is atc@npr.org. Please add pronunciation help, where you're writing from, and give us your phone numbers.